Welcome to everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as to promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. And we also have an Echo Link available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob, KD2NVB, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or send it to our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Roy, good evening, everybody out there. Hope you're out there. Looking forward to a good net tonight. Back to you, Roy.
Thank you, Bob. So, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Control, this is AC2ZB checking in. I do have a question.
Okay, it's very seldom that we have doubling, but William and Sam, welcome. I guess William will take your question first.
Okay, so Roy, I'm sitting playing with networking in the house. I think you mentioned at one point you had something that monitored all the network traffic that was on your network and kept track of all the assets, some kind of Raspberry Pi. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. If Sam has a different topic, that's ham radio, maybe he trumps me on that comment, and I'll listen and see what he has to see what you have to say to him. But I want to find out a little bit about this networking thing I thought you were talking about a while ago.
Well, Sam, do you have a question tonight, and is it amateur radio related?
Yes, I do, Roy. This is Sam, Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. My question for the evening is, what is the effect of global warming on propagation?
Okay, that's an interesting one. Probably kind of relatively minimal. It does not really or should not affect the ionosphere, which is the principal propagation means for our radios. So probably not a great deal. I mean, certainly storms can interrupt the transmissions, but that's a more on the ground type of phenomena. So fortunately, at least for us, as far as I'm aware, global warming, as long as it doesn't get catastrophic, it should not really have a significant effect on skyway propagation because of the ionosphere being relatively safe up there.
Well, thank you very much for your analysis. I hope it's true. Thank you.
I hope so as well. Unfortunately, it's going to wreak havoc in coastal areas, and you know that's where strange people make strange comments about how the ocean rising is somehow going to give more beachfront real estate. Actually, if you think about it, it gives you less beachfront real estate, and the beachfront real estate you used to own is submerged. I think the same guy said you could sell it. I don't know exactly who you can sell flooded beachfront land. stand for. But anyway, we'll deal with it as best we can. It's unfortunately very much like the weather these days. All you can do is complain about it, because none of the really rich guys want to do anything about it, except maybe turn to God. I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Sam. William, let me drop for a sec. Okay, I was alluding to a software program called Pi-hole, P-I-H-O-L-E. It runs on Raspberry Pis. You can Google Pi-hole, again, P-I-H-O-L-E. And it's sort of a reasonably intelligent gateway. You put it as close to your router as you can, and it gets rid of some ads. It bars known IP addresses that are kind of running strange, dangerous software and all kinds of things. I have it online, and it's relatively it's free, which is a good thing. As long as you have the hardware to run it in, most people have at least one or two Raspberry Pis. You don't need a particularly powerful one. So look up Pi-hole. You might even get one that has everything kind of coded onto the SD card. So you kind of write the SD card, and it'll put Linux on it and put Pi-hole on it. If not, then you can just download the Pi-hole application and install it using Unix commands.
What does the UI look like on that? Does it have a network server in it that you can get to it, and there's a dashboard that you would sign into, something like that?
Yeah, it sets up a web service. So you basically just kind of address it to the IP address and the port for your Raspberry Pi on another computer, and it gives you a status report and some controls.
Does it have to be a two-port Raspberry Pi, so it goes in between, let's say, the router and the first switch, or is it just how does it exist off to the side?
It doesn't have to have a... I don't think any Raspberry Pi is kind of built like that. It might have two ports, but it doesn't have... It's not like a VNA or anything. It just sniffs at the at the lowest level it can. It sniffs for IP packets, and I think you have to kind of put it next to your router. If you put it at the end of your network, it has less ability to block things. But if you put it ahead of in the router, it will kind of block things that it's been programmed to block without, that's not the way how networks, unfortunately or fortunately, work with computers. They don't have ins and outs. They're all switching, and they all kind of interact with each other. So you don't have to kind of get two ports. One port will do, as long as the closest you put it to your router, the better it works.
So interesting, the mechanics of how that actually works in a packet arrangement may be that it sees an IP address and jams it. I don't know how it could actually affect, how it would be able to go upstream into the router and then make a block, unless maybe it puts a list out for the router. I'll read up more. I think that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That's very interesting. I don't know. I'm going to have to Google it. Maybe there's somebody else who's got some questions for the TechNet, and I'll Google this and we'll talk in a few minutes.
Okay. It's not that it goes uphill or however you phrase it to the router. It's that the router kind of sprays IP addresses throughout the network. I mean, in some managed hubs, it'll kind of direct it to a single private IP address within your home. Like there's a master IP address that your internet service provider uses for all of your equipment. And then when it gets into the router, it then selectively sends it out to different computers if it needs to be addressed that way. But most internet packets are kind of open-ended, and it's kind of easy for other devices on your network to spy on every other device on your network. And so when it finds that a message is coming from an external IP address that you've blocked, it will kind of implement some kind of message that collides with it. It seems to be very effective, and there's probably lots of material written on how it works. I haven't really considered it much for at least a couple of years. It's kind of a set it and forget it type of a thing. Since it runs on a Unix kernel that lives in my Raspberry Pi, it's not like Windows where you have to basically reboot it every 2-3 days to kind of clean it. Otherwise, it gets a bit constipated. But yeah, look it up, read up on it. It's a very relatively simple to configure, and it's useful. It's not amazing. Probably more sophisticated smart hubs, smart/managed hubs, switches have a little bit more power, but they cost a lot of money.
I find it very interesting. It seems sort of magical. I'm sure that there's a good write-up on it someplace. I was thinking it maybe affect the bandwidth or a latency, or maybe it just tells the router that, hey, I'm the first port, and that's it. That's all you know about. I'm it, and then it maybe creates a network behind it, like if the router maybe a 192.168.1, and then it says, okay, you guys, it's 198.1.2, and then it does its packet filtering like that. So anyway, I'll find out more when I read up on it. I really appreciate the time. Thanks, Roy.
Yeah, also, when you're configuring your regular computers in your house, you have to configure to a dynamic name server, DNS. So the Pi-hole provides its own DNS. So a lot of its magic is simply done by manipulating the DNS information. If it doesn't have information on whatever domain you typed in, it'll go to the internet itself and grab the IP address. If it's on the IP black hat blacklist, it'll block translation and you won't be able to connect to it. So I think one of its major ways of blocking pirate IP addresses and dangerous IP addresses is through its own DNS server.
That makes sense. That's cool. I'm definitely going to read up on that. Do you know anything that would be able to put on a network and it would be able to tell me all the devices that are sitting out on the network? You know, it would just like remember the traffic and what Ethernet port or something and be able to sort of draw a graph up over time of everybody assets that are on the network?
Well, to a degree, you're just really looking for an IP lookup software. They sell those for cell phones. They sell them for PCs. They're not as brilliant as I would like them to be. They'll sniff around and they'll say, okay, you have something at, and then they'll list IP addresses. And sometimes if they have good memories, they store that. And if they scan it later on, they can tell you which IP addresses from its previous scan are still connected and which ones are not connected anymore. They will give you some fragment of identification if available in the way that your computer kind of, if you search through for IP addresses, it will identify itself as a Windows operating system device, so you can figure out it's a computer. Some are more obscure, especially Chinese devices. Sometimes they say what they're for, and sometimes they just say what company made them or what company made the Ethernet device built into the motherboard or such. So just look up IP lookup software, and there's a slew of them out there.
Well, that'll keep me busy for some time. I really appreciate the information, Roy.
You're welcome. Also, Google Wireshark. I think it's free. It also kind of gives you some information. I think it's more focused for Wi-Fi connections, but it probably gives you something that it sniffs through the switch. So Wireshark. You know, Google it and take a look at it.
That's great. You know, recently we've been talking about using Netlogger for the, 2-meter net and stuff. Do you use that on your 10-meter net?
No, I use my iPad and my Apple Pencil.
And I'm looking at the software and it does all these wonderful things, but the idea of having something you have to type into and then talk on the phone, it just, it, doesn't work really with me. And I read a lot and looked at it up a lot, and I don't know if that's something that's going to be useful or not. I don't know. There seems to be a whole culture around it that I'm unfamiliar with.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I never really got into the habit of using software, logging software. It's very useful if you do contests. I don't do contests. It's very useful if you're using DX and you're kind of collecting worked all states or worked all this or worked all that, which I don't do. So, you know, when I do the 10 meters, I have my iPad open and I scribble down who checks in and I scribble down other little bits and pieces of information. And because I don't really need to kind of have it in a searchable field, if I need to, I could go back to a particular Sunday and see what I scribbled. But that serves my purpose. Logging equipment for the sake of a net, especially a net that usually has four check-ins, is a bit overkill.
I can see that there's some attractions one way and some the other way. But it's interesting because once you start getting into that, then it takes away some of the privacy of the radio because then you actually are putting out the call signs of everybody's chitter-chatting on the net. And that broadcast to everybody that has a log, who has that application open, and even you can monitor that on your phone. So all of a sudden, if you start using that logging software, you're advertising to everyone in the world who's actually in the net, which, you know, in some cases is a good thing, in some cases may not feel as private as just a regular ham radio where we're just talking over the radio.
Again, I'm not quite sure what the point of the exercise is. If you're really interested in who's on the radio, if you listen on the radio, you'll find out who's on the radio. And, otherwise, some guy in Minnesota, I don't think he cares one way or the other. So, yes, it's a lack of privacy, but the 21st century is all about a lack of privacy. Again, don't really see the utility. It's more of it's there, so I'm going to play with it, as opposed to this is going to make my life incredibly easier and or better. I don't see how. So, like I said before, I tend not to use logging software. Occasionally, I'll download free or sampled versions and play around with it. But I never use them more than a day or so, just for curiosity's sake or, to see what they are. But again, for the sake of a net with a few people checking in, I don't see the point.
I also have just a hard enough time being able to write down things properly on the computer and manipulate the keyboard and be able to type properly because I can tend to screw things up with my fingers hitting two keys and then have to backspace and clean it up. I think your idea of using the iPad with a pencil is great because then you don't have the scribbling in the notebook. You can selectively erase things really easily. And then does it flip it into text if you want to do that at some point?
I think so. I've never actually used it, but I think it's capable of doing that. If not, it's capable of reducing it to a PDF graphic, and there's more than enough programs that will take a PDF, a graphic, and turn it into text.
Okay. Well, I've run out of questions and stuff for you right now. Anyway, thanks a lot for the net, and maybe somebody else has got a question.
Okay, Doc. Thank you, William, as always, for participating. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We are on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m., and it goes for as long as it needs to go for. Sometimes it's done and over by 9:30. Occasionally, we've gone for as far as 11:15. So if anyone out there had any questions or comments of a technical nature and would like to discuss them tonight, please hit that push to talk and identify yourself.
Kilo Delta 2, Oscar Victor Mike, Axel checking in, give a comment.
Sure, Axel, welcome aboard. What would you like to say?
How you doing, Roy? Maxim, I think I heard the Bob also in the beginning of the net. I was just walking here in Prospect Park. And I just want to give a comment over there. I heard a very interesting conversation about FIHO over there. If you guys have a chance to look onto CASA operative system, Casa Charlie Alpha Sierra Alpha OS. It's a very interesting operating system that installs into a Raspberry Pi also. And what it does, it gives you a bunch of selections on an app, applications, software download manager, and each software that downloads on it, it comes as containers, I think, that each one is separated from the other programs. They don't interact with each other unless you make it interact manually. And one of the options also is Pi-hole over there. It installs, gives you the option to install that program, the Pi-hole, instead of as an operative system, just as a separated program. And exactly that's that. But also gives you options to more programs. Let's say if you want to put in a program to manage automatically in your home, I think it's called an automator or whatever it's called, that you can manage things that they are connected on the same network, or you can make a media server, whatever. It has a lot of features over there, that operative system, that is not limited to just one specific kind of thing or two. So, like, you can run a lot of servers for the same thing from the same Raspberry Pi. That was the comment over there, Roy. KD2OBM.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. That's sort of the way that I run a lot of things on my network-attached storage devices. They have that type of container utilization where, you know, it's each application is isolated and kind of imprisoned in its own little virtual machine. And I have a lot of things that my network-attached storage device is running simultaneously in the background. So that's a very useful thing for people who have any kind of a server, or you can run those type of containers in PyStars, but it's a little bit more flexible for the amount of power that network attachment storage devices tend to have. But yeah, these container technology, there's Kubernetes, there's a couple of different kind of versions of that going around. Very useful.
And the question that I have for you, Roy, about this thing, you said that each one of the devices that they run on the network, if you want to set up a DNS on it, you have to specify to each one of the devices on the network parameters to go to the Raspberry Pi Pi-hole as a DNS. Instead of doing that, what do you think about running the router itself? Route the router itself to the Pi-hole IP. Back to you, Roy.
I think we have the same problem. How does the Pi-hole? You can install a third party operating system on some routers that include those types of security features that are similar to Pi-hole, but as a separate entity with a Ethernet connector on the end, how do you route it? You can't kind of route it serially. That as I mentioned before, isn't quite how Ethernet protocols tend to work. So how would you do that?
See, I didn't try it, but I tried it setting up the DNS on the router itself. You can change the DNS to one of those open web services, let's say Google, if you want to use Google, or there's other ones, or the paid ones, if you want to have a more like a parental control, more restricted. So you can tell the router over there in the network settings which DNS you want to use. If not, it's going to use the default one. But I mean, I believe you could put the Pi-hole specified one. And that way, you won't need to give a to each one of the devices, specifically the DNS, will work through the router straight away.
AC2GS. Okay, I didn't quite understand the first time you described it. Yeah, you could use the router's requester for a DNS server and use the pie-hole. Problem with that, as I see it, is it depends upon your individual devices. Some devices will take anything that the router offers as a DNS. If you already have a DNS set up in your hardware, chances are it won't do that. So you'd have to still go back into the individual Windows computer and check on its DNS settings and change it if it didn't change it when it booted up to the modified router. So can you do that? Yes. Is it 100% sure thing? No.
Okay. It's a matter of trying and testing it. How do you copy me there, Roy? I don't know how I'm reaching the receiver. I'm talking, but I think I'm on the south part of the Prospect Park, closer to the Parkside Avenue. And there's a bunch of hills and trees between me and the receiver, so I don't know how I'm getting there. Maybe on the second time you understood me better, so that's what I wanted to say. It's a matter of trying and see what's the outcome. That was the comment, Roy. KD2OVM.
Okay, very good. Like I said before, it would work with some, but probably not all of your devices, because you know you introduce that after you've already installed all of your devices. So some of them are going to stick with the DNS that it had and won't reset just because you changed the DNS setting for the router. And you're about 20% really crackly noise, but I could make you out everything you say.
We'll have to see. We'll have to experiment with that, because I didn't do it. Didn't route the DNS from my router to the pie hole. But it's a matter of testing and see how it comes. And thanks for the report. I'm going to continue walking, Roy. I'm going to think in the meantime if there's a question. I've been reading during the week the old QST magazines. I'll see if something comes into the memory, and I'll see with the time a question comes. I'll keep listening, Roy. KD2OVM.
Okay, very good. Thank you for participating as always, and we'll talk to you down the line. I might want to add the people listening tonight. You may have heard that the FCC sent out a very curious notice that it was contemplating changing some rules, simplifying and deregulating some things. I think it was about 3-4 months ago. Delete, delete, delete was what the notification was titled, which was scary to many hams. There's been a preliminary report, and it seems like the FCC, at least when it comes to both Citizens Band and GMRS and ham radio, they really didn't modify, they didn't really delete any specific rules or add any specific rules. They more, you could describe it as they simply removed a couple of redundant entries that said the same thing to the rules. So if there was two different parts of Part 97 that pretty much said the same thing slightly differently, they removed one of the two. So so far, don't be frightened that, you know, they're going to do away with ham radio, they're going to take our frequencies. So far, it's been very benign, which I kind of thought it might be. I don't think the powers that be think that much about CB or ham or GMRS. And so, you know, since they don't think one way or the other, most likely I thought they were going to leave us alone. And it appears they are. Anyway, this is AC2GS, and this is still the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And if anyone wants to, we got lots of time. If you have a question or a comment or a topic for discussion, hit that push to talk.
Comment on that?
Certainly, Axel.
Well, KD2OVM, I saw a video yesterday from Ham Radio. This was bringing all the modifications that, yeah, we don't have to be worried about, that they look like redundant lines, concepts, in here necessarily. It looks like some board took the time to sit down and look at all the rules of the regulations over there, yeah, and remove all the stuff that was unnecessary, because it was already mentioned about TV, CMRS, ham radio, whatever he explains over there, touches over there. If you have the time, of the listeners, if they have the time to check into that video, they can always comment, or anyone saw that, give a comment over here. I didn't see anything to be worried about that you just mentioned, Roy. That was my comment.
Okay, very good. I saw the same YouTube. I usually don't watch his stuff, but the topic interested me. Apparently, one of the few things he actually mentioned specifically was that GMRS had no particular regulation allowing them to link their repeaters. So that was made more obvious, I think, in the revision. But since I don't have GMRS, and you know, didn't really affect me at all, I just stored it away. But it was a reasonably good video, and it should assuage people's fears. You know, a lot of times when something is not totally known, people jump to the worst case scenarios, and thankfully, as far as this goes, there is really none. It's not going to affect anyone in its present slight modification, unless you've memorized part 97 and you'll have to rememorize a couple of little entries. That's all.
Well, there's, apart from this, there's a lot of people that they want to contribute and on the positive way, and help, let's say, CB radio to make it more, not to be called anymore CB radio, more like the free band, and to make involve amateur radio more into the 11-meter band and things like that, and starting with proposals for the FCC to do some amendments over there on the regulations also, to see how they can change the rules to make it more, more friendly for everyone. Who was talking about that? Okay, there's a lot of TV people that talk about it. One guy came with that, was Coastal Airwaves or something, who was mentioning something related to that. And he mentioned also the amendments that they are doing there on the FCC's regulation for us, for CV, and for GMRS. Yeah, they spoke about that. For GMRS, they're going to be more specified over there. I use since there is a lot of leaked repeaters and so very little amount of possibilities, let's say. Once you have a frequency allocated, and then that one is linked there, it's like overused. So for the people in the GMRS, probably the complaint came from them, from the people that they use it a lot, the GMRS spectrum. So maybe it's right to not have it used over there for local usage. Even if you use something more open with more possibilities, okay, you have other options, right? It's a matter of to discuss that kind of things between the people, to come into debate, as it's called, KC2OVM.
KC2GS. Yeah, I think there were a lot of comments by hams and GMS people and CB people about all kinds of interesting modifications. Again, I get the distinct impression that the FCC doesn't want to be involved too much with any of it. So again, if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would bet that this is going to be primarily what they meant when they made that notification, at least with us in mind. I don't think they're going to change the what CB is or even the name of it. Again, I think unfortunately they don't really spend a lot of time thinking about us, and their budget really is focused into other places. They don't really spend any money on us. So yeah, I think that's the best. You know, we don't see them, they don't see us, and we go along our little way. So I think those recommendations from third parties, although curiously interesting and in some cases weird, I would be surprised if the FCC picks them up.
Well, I think they got plenty of money, but whatever. we will not reach the level of the commercial companies they give for their spectrum, right? We cannot compete with them, but they get plenty from GMRS, from all those services anyway. Not enough compared to the others, but they got plenty. As long as we don't we don't talk to them too much, so they don't think about us, the better, I think. They shouldn't think about us. When they start thinking about us, they'll start taking away from the spectrum.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Keep in mind, up until recently, the cost to renew your license was zero because the FCC kind of sat there and looked at everything and figured out how much they could get from us and how much it would really cost them in time, trouble, and money to bill everyone for renewing. So they did away with the renewal until Congress passed a law that didn't directly affect us, but it was reinterpreted as the need for any license required a fee. So that's why they reinstated the fees. So, you know, we're so inconsequential that if not for some kind of legal requirement from another law, they didn't even care if we paid to renew our licenses. So I think that's the best approach. Just try not to be seen, you know. If they don't see you, they can't screw around with you.
And to have a ham radio operators in Congress and all the politician positions, as many as we can have. With the advance of technology and communication and connections and device connected, that each device is paying for already for the service and licensing, and more devices will need connectivity. They're making plenty of money, come on. They don't even have to think. They don't need to think about it. Unless they want to expand to more bands. But as long as they don't need it, I don't know, they're focused right now on the satellite communication. That's a big advance, I think, instead of having to set up towers to connect between them. One tower connected directly to the satellite to be the connectivity to whatever that is they need. So probably, I don't know, what do you see in the future, Roy? You think that they'll need more and more spectrum to be allocated for commercial use or unnecessary?
Yeah, I think they're always going to want more allocations. But thankfully, they really don't want HF. HF is not really, for modern-day telecommunications, what they're really looking for is as much microwave spectrum as they can get. So I'm sure as time goes on and technology improves, The telecommunications companies will buy pieces of our microwave spectrum over time. But I think pretty much HF is and UHF and VHF are relatively safe. They're useful, but they're not quite that useful.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, I'm going to get out of the park now, so I'm going to be very body on how can I go here, Peter. So, I'll try to listen in quiet. Maybe to OVM. If I have difficulties, I'm going to go echo.
Well, thank you, Axel. I appreciate the participation. Once again, I'm AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk. Well, it seems that we're coming close to the end of this particular technical net. I'll throw out some trivia that I discovered recently. I thought I kind of knew the, quote, famous amateur radio operators, end quote, Walter Cronkite, Joe Walsh. There's a couple of people that always come up, the senator from Arizona. There's always a couple of people that come up. But I heard a couple of people that I wasn't really used to hearing their names for amateur radio. And anyone has any comments one way or the other, I found out that Marlon Brando was an amateur radio operator. I think he mostly operated in Tahiti or something. He bought an island or something, and he used that as his location, and he would get on the air. And also Priscilla Presley. I wouldn't have imagined Priscilla Presley was an amateur radio operator, but supposedly she was, or still is, perhaps. Anyway, any comments, please hit that push to talk. Yeah? Any comments out there before we call it a night?
KD2OVM. From the United States, I don't have any records about amateur radio politicians. But from where I come from, Argentina, there was a very known president over there, Menem. He used to be some radio operator. There used to be a cancelier. Cancelier is, I don't know if it's called like that here in America. It's a minister of international affairs. Also very known amateur ham radio operator. There used to be a lot of people that unfortunately today they don't live anymore. They used to be very active over there. The whole thing of operating, being able to operate. Being a ham radio operator, and the people used to build more their own rigs than what they do today. People buy more commercial things that are already available. These people used to make their own radios in order to have communications, and yeah, it used to be like that. Not too many today. KD2OVM.
Yeah, I mean, that's the trend for things like that. At the very beginning, there was no commercial hardware, so you pretty much had to build it yourself or get a friend to build it, and then friends told friends who told friends, and the guy who knew how to do it, who was a bit of a capitalist, went into business and the manufacturers, and little by little it was more manufactured and less home built until it was 99% manufactured like it is now. There's still guys who knock things together or use really old stuff, rebuild boat anchors and such. But yeah, nowadays, especially with surface mount, very few people have the patience to build something as sophisticated as modern day transceivers. They might do an antenna tuner because all it is some capacitors and some inductors, but complex equipment, especially software-defined radios. It's a manufactured phenomenon for the most part. Unfortunately, it changes the hobby a bit. But what can you do?
There is still a lot of people that they are crazy for AM, and they build their own equipment, or sometimes it's just military surplus equipment and they modify it, or they just use for receivers those. Military equipment, and they build their own transmitter with their own power amplifiers and things like that, all made with the fields, and they help each other. I'm hearing a lot about that till today, Roy. Not so many, but they still do till today.
Yeah, it's very strange. You find the tinkerers either in the low frequencies, like 160 or 80 meters in AM, or microwave. You tend not to see them in the middle anywhere. But they also do semiconductors. There's more than a little chat on 75 meters from the AM guys of building, Class D and Class F and Class G amplifiers for their AM transmitter. So and they use semiconductors for some of that. Although a lot of them are reusing broadcast AM transmitters. I knew a guy who bought one of those and put it up in his attic. Unfortunately, he became a silent key before he had a chance to really take it out and take it for a drive, if you will.
Well, at least he enjoyed building it and tinkering with it and doing tests probably until he could really totally finalize it. Not a sometimes to finish something is not the total satisfaction, it's the opposite. Once you finish it, you kind of feel sad because, okay, you test it, it works, super happy, but that's it. Now you have to look for something new, and that thing is done, it's finished. And that kept you busy till now. So he enjoyed it, designing, building, and testing, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. He bought it used from someone. I don't know if he had to really tweak it or he had an opportunity to test it to see if he had to tweak it. But I mean, just the act of those things weigh a ton. And to decide, rather than to put it at ground level or the basement, he decided to put it up in his attic. So it must have been a big pain in the whatever, just getting the damn thing up there. And then you can imagine after he passed away, he left a few sisters. Then the sisters had to figure out how to get it out of the attic.
What is it? Is it a big machine? Sometimes I know that what they use for AM equipment, the amplifiers, all that, it becomes very heavy, very heavy. A friend of mine went to buy an amplifier for 600 watts, was a military one, and it ended up weighing like about 50 kilograms. That's a little more than 100 pounds on weight. And one person alone cannot handle it, I mean, or could, but you have to be like a King Kong, a very strong person. But you need two men to lift that up, heavy metal. And yeah, I imagine that with the piece of soil, probably had to call about a couple of men there to deal with that. I misunderstood you, Roy. I thought that I didn't hear you well there. You said that he bought it already built instead of building it himself. No, I'm talking about the other people that I know. They show me things. They send me pictures of the diagrams and all the things that they build and the modifications that they make in order to make it work. Because a lot of those things are experiments. And once a friend from a different country, he requested me to buy on eBay a filter for 7.180 to use it on AM. He was building a radio just to use on that specific frequency, and that's it. And he wanted to work perfectly there. So he needed that filter. It didn't cost much. It cost like $30, but they couldn't get it over there. They had to buy it here on the United States and then make a trip to their country. So it was an interesting thing. And till today, they're working on that.
Oh, okay. It's good to have a goal. And you know, sometimes it's even better to have a goal that you never quite reach. It's always just out of hand. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. Just getting a proper crystal these days is a problem. In the old days, wasn't that much of a problem because there were a lot of crystals. But now, if you need a specific, a strange resonant frequency crystal, there's very few sources for things like that.
Yeah, you promised to identify those parts and the people that they get into with their hands into those things, so don't throw them away as garbage. So you should go to the right people to resell that. And not always ends up on the right hands. It goes straight to the trash, right? I can't imagine myself when, fortunately, somebody passes away and they have, maybe they collected the silver and gold in their basement, and unfortunately the family never looked into the basement where they used to hide those things, and who knows, maybe nobody will ever find those things. And the same applies here to those kind of relics on filter for ham radio, right? That's why sometimes they become very expensive, like you said, because they don't make them anymore. But sometimes they are very cheap, and there's not so many, but people are not buying them, though. it become 30 fortunately for this guy, it was before that specific frequency that he wanted. Okay, that was a comment. KD2 OVM.
Yeah, I mean, quartz crystals, the quartz itself is pennies. It's the expertise in dimensionally adjusting it for the frequency that you want to use that's the problem. During World War II, they basically had it all figured out, and they could whip one up almost immediately. But those days of crystal controlled oscillators are gone. So everyone has a variable frequency oscillator. They have phase lock loop circuits. They have all kinds of nice little things so that the expertise in tuning a crystal is not that useful anymore, and so everyone's gone to other fields of endeavor.
If money wouldn't be a problem, Roy, what would you prefer? What they make today, electronic filters, or you prefer more the mechanical one, the crystal and all that?
Well, I tend to try to live on the bleeding edge. I have my software-defined radios, and the benefit of a digital filter as opposed to an analog filter is you can have the steepest skirts that you want on these filters and it won't ring. So a digital filter is far better than 99.9% of mechanical filters out there. You really have to build it with the jet propulsion lab to get it to go anywhere close to the benefits of a digital based filter.
So in the real world, the new technology is superior in your view, and the old technology is more for the lovers of the old technology and to keep it working. They have that nostalgia, and say the soul of the on the side of the amateur radio is more located on into the mechanical and physical part, rather than the software and electronic computerized things. What do you think, Roy?
Yeah, I mean, people are nostalgic. As you get older, you get unfortunately more nostalgic. In the old days, nostalgia was a disorder. You suffered from nostalgia. So I like the old stuff. I have a picture of the old stuff. I would like to operate the new stuff. There's a reason why the new stuff is available, not just because of that's the only thing that they're building. The sophistication of what you can do, I mean, my 6700 Flex radio, I can listen to 8 different conversations on 4 different bands simultaneously. I don't know of any legacy transceiver that's capable of anything close to that. So, the old stuff is attractive, and people enjoyed it for many, many years, but I'm kind of glad for the new technology. Same thing with turntables. I had turntables, and I had the brushes, and I had the anti-static things, and still records were a bit of a pain in the backside. They, no matter what you did, they got scratched, they developed noise and crackles and all kinds of things. Digital music is so much cleaner and easier.
Well, Roy, you can add Bluetooth to that turntable. 100% on that. One is to enjoy, and the other is to use it in real life. Like a friend of mine told me, I'm becoming old. I don't wanna have headaches anymore. I just wanna use the thing, and that's it. What I meant in my question is for the person who wants to learn how it works, how it goes, how things are. Let's say, how did we reach where we are today? But let's say, in your view, the electronic part, software part, all that is more like an emulation, or is something built from scratch? It's like a different type of school, completely different. Or is an emulation just more sophisticated, with more hands, more tools, more possibilities on it?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you want to understand the fundamentals, certainly of legacy radios, you should have a legacy radio. The RF amplifier at the front end, the intermediate frequency mixers, the filters, the digital signal processors, and the demodulators, and the audio amplifiers at all. Whereas it's a little bit more, well, it's a lot more black box with a software-defined radio. You have usually the RF amplifier, and then that that feeds directly to a digitizer. And from that point on, you have digital streams that you then do algorithms to affect all the things that you would with the other stages. But it's all done in algorithms. And it's all very black boxy. And there's no way you could look at a software-defined radio's guts and have a really good feeling for how it's doing the things it's doing, because most of them are programs that are doing bit manipulations, and you can't really see a bit manipulated. You can hear it eventually, but you can't see it.
Got you. Okay, Roy, I'm getting home now. I'm outside. Gotta do some stuff there. So really appreciate the net and all the topic over there, all the concepts discussed, and keep it going. I hear the other one that you have over there in the Long Island, and yeah, you can compare the participation of people over there with here. You have hundreds of people there, and here it is what it is, but still, we are learning. Here we are learners, and we really appreciate it. It's more like a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 learning experience, and with the passing of sometimes you have 10 people, right? Sometimes you can have 10, 15 people listening and participating, and sometimes it's just one person, and now that you give a lot from yourself to this way, and we really appreciate it. So thank you so much for the net, Roy. I'm going home now. This is 82 OVM. Good night.
Okay, good night. Axel, I appreciate what you said. When someone suggests that I do this technical net, my reasoning at the time was that, over at the Limark, Dick was doing it, K2RIW, may rest in peace. And I thought that some people might get way too intimidated with Dick. There were people very afraid of getting on the Limark technical net for fear that they would sound stupid next to Dick. So I thought that maybe I would intimidate less people here at Brooklyn. So that's why I gave it a try. And then I ended up hosting both of them. So go figure. Thank you, Axel. We'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club technical net. Anyone has any questions or comments or topic for discussion, please hit that push to talk. Very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be December 3rd. It's a big one. It's our annual holiday party and elections for the executive board. It will be a hybrid meeting with a virtual meeting using Zoom software. Club members will be emailed with the details of the meeting. The physical location of the in-person meeting is the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required Zoom link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 9:30 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 or 381 upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it down for now, but we'll be back November 26th, and you're welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys, stay safe and be well. AC2GS clear.